Welcome to this fantastic episode of the Game Horizon podcast. This is episode 24. How's it going, Anthony?
It's going well, Alex, and please don't ever use that pun again.
Is it a pun? It's not even a real word.
I know, but it's whatever.
Oh, geez. So what's going on, man? I know that it's, you know, it's the opening of the Dark Knight Rises, like, last week, and, you know, now it's like, what is it? By the time this comes out, it'd be the second weekend that the movie's out and stuff. How you been doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Yeah, The Dark Knight's been released about a week ago. Can I take a moment to say something real quick?
Sure.
All my condolences to the families in Aurora for what happened there.
Yeah, same here. It's pretty close to you, huh?
Yeah, Aurora is about 100 miles away from me.
Yeah, by the way, folks, that's close to Anthony. 100 miles. Like, if you're in, like, Southern California, you're like, 100 miles? That's pretty freaking far, dude.
Well, you know what? You know how it's kind of funny you talk about that? You know how they talk about that megalopolis theory that they have on the East Coast where New York and all those cities are kind of lined up?
Sure.
Okay. Well, in Colorado, you know, Pueblo, where I live, is one of the biggest cities. Then you have the second biggest, about 40 miles north, Colorado Springs.
Right.
And then 40 miles or about maybe 40, 50 miles away from Colorado Springs is Denver.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of have a megalopolis. And in between there, there's, you know, places like Fountain, and you got Castle Rock between it, and which is a pretty big metropolitan area. So it's kind of like that.
That's interesting. Yeah, I've never been to Colorado, so I have absolutely no idea how it is there. But that kind of paints a pretty good picture of it, I think.
Kind of. Southeastern, this part of eastern Colorado is more populated if you go more west.
Okay.
You get into the more smaller, the smaller towns. However, you know, Grand Junction, which is the third largest city in Pueblo, is in the west, ironically, of Colorado, I mean. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So. But yeah, again, you know, our condolences to what happened in Aurora, Colorado and stuff. That's really like a heinous crime that's committed to everybody. And yeah, I mean, you know, if you want to get like kind of, you know, semantic about it, it is kind of like a terrorist act. You know what I mean? It's like not, I mean, it obviously it's not by terrorists and stuff like that, but you know, the guy's whole goal was to basically terrorize people and stuff. And, you know, I think somebody said it like it, you know, when, you know, 9/11 happened to us and stuff, that, you know, the whole goal of terrorism is to basically prevent people from doing shit that they, you know, that they would normally do in everyday life. I hope that this, you know, as a nation and stuff, we didn't actually succumb to this terror and stuff and actually still kept on going our everyday lives and stuff and didn't let this tragedy actually affect us, you know, and our enjoyment of our lives and stuff like that. Because I don't think, like, the victims of this heinous event would wish that upon us either, you know?
I don't know if you heard, too, the good thing. Christian Bale went to see him. He was in Aurora.
Yeah, I saw a couple of photos, actually, of him in Aurora and stuff. And, yeah, there was no... He went there in his own accord. He didn't go there on behalf of Warner Brothers or the entire crew. It's just him and his wife basically came to visit and stuff like that. And, you know, he wanted to kind of wish the, you know, the victims a speedy recovery and stuff like that. And, you know, that is really, you know, like big thing of him. And, you know, like the past year with, you know, the whole thing, or actually past few years with the whole thing with, like, you know, that whole issue where he was like yelling at some, you know, staff and stuff like that. You know, you can say that about him and stuff and kind of dock that against him. But, you know, it's very nice of him to do that. He didn't need to do that. But the fact that he did. That's very nice of him and stuff.
Well, let me say something about that, about the yelling thing. Mm-hmm. Look, movies are stressful things. You know, Oh no, someone got yelled at by Christian Bale. That shit happens all the time. That happens in regular jobs. Mm-hmm. We just make a big deal because it's a celebrity, and a celebrity, some people think, is like a god, and if they falter, we love to see it. But you know what? They're human, and that's why I don't take, you know, TMZ seriously.
So I don't watch TMZ anyway, so.
Yeah. Well, so anyway, what else is going on with you?
Well, for me, wow, did I just do that? Well, for me, so obviously, like, you know, this episode is going to be about Batman. So I tried to basically do a lot of research on the Bat. So I actually started replaying a lot of my older games, like, you know, like the adventures of Batman and Robin. And I'm not going to tell you how, because obviously that's not any of these Batman games for the older consoles are not available for, you know, for the virtual console or whatnot. Well, I could basically say I played it on emulation. What are you going to do? Huh?
Oh no.
I did that. And then I played a little bit of Arkham City just to get familiar with it. Cause I actually played Arkham Asylum twice back to back. And that thing is still pretty fresh in my mind, but I actually went further and I actually went and got the comic books. Like now, I didn't just get the new 52s, and you know, I think we'll explain what the new 52s are later once we start talking about the comic books. But I also went back and bought the Dark Knight Returns, which is by Frank Miller, and I think Batman Year One was also Frank Miller.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. So I bought those. I basically read through, you know, all of Year One, which is not that bad. Like you said, you know, like it was only like four issues and stuff. So it was pretty tiny. The Dark Knight Returns, I'm just having a little bit more trouble because Frank Miller is so goddamn wordy in that whole thing. And I'm like, holy crap.
And okay, his artwork, I love his artworks, but it can be, his artwork is very gritty. It's not the most graceful thing.
Yeah, it's just not, like, it's gritty for a reason, but to me, in Dark Knight Returns, it just wasn't that interesting, because it was kind of a mess of, you know, lines and stuff like that. Like, there were some panels that I just couldn't figure out what the hell I was looking at. I mean, I don't know if you ever encountered that problem, but I certainly did in this one. I was like, what the fuck am I looking at?
You know what, the Dark Knight Returns is... And a lot of people are going to crucify me for this, but I don't care, okay? It's kind of like reading, I think it's like Finnegan's Wake. I don't know if you're familiar with that book. And now, it's not on the same literary level, perhaps, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm comparing it, it's the only thing that pops in my head, is Finnegan's Wake is a very stream of consciousness book.
Right.
And you have to read it several times to really absorb it, because... it's kind of messy, but it's messy for a reason, and that's how I feel about Dark Knight Returns. I read it 10 years ago, and I had a hard time getting into it.
Right.
And then I read it I read it again a couple times over the years, and every time I read it, it got better and better. The first time I was like, well, this is overrated, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I read it more and it got rewarding. So we'll talk about that later, but that's all I got.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, let's not get into that right now, because obviously, you know, but... so other than that, I've actually haven't been playing my games a lot. Pocket Planes has kind of died off. Like, that whole game is just, you know, just kind of disappeared. I was playing for a while Amazing Alex, and I don't know if you've heard of that game.
Oh, I heard that you're amazing. Oh, that's gay. Or lame.
Yeah, why did you say that? Anyways, so Amazing Alex is basically kind of like this old game called The Incredible Machine. Have you heard of that?
I think I have, yes.
Yeah, The Incredible Machine was basically like a puzzle game where you get to create these kind of Rube Goldberg kind of contraptions where, you know, like baseball bats hit like a ball and the ball hits like a boxing glove that extends. And, you know, it's kind of like it causes like a really weird kind of almost fun chain reaction. Now, Amazing Alex is basically kind of the same thing, except, of course, you know, it's a lot more colorful. The palette's a lot brighter. You can definitely tell that the guys who made Angry Birds, who basically developed this game, definitely have their art style kind of like locked in and stuff. And it's really fun. The thing is, when I got to the second area, it's just that, you know, it's not as complicated as some of the stuff that I found in The Incredible Machine. So I kind of got bored of it and it's just kind of moved on and stuff. But I would recommend it. I mean, it's pretty cheap. I mean, it's like about, I think I want to say it's like $1, $2 or something like that. But, you know, it's a fun game. Again, it's from the guys who made Angry Birds, but it doesn't have like the problems that Angry Birds has that, you know, Anthony has been complaining over the past, what, several episodes and stuff?
Over the last probably like 6 months.
Yeah, so it's fun. But the game that I've really been playing like a lot lately is this game called Field Runners 2. Now, did I ever talk about the first game in the series?
No, but you've been talking a lot about Field Runners 2 on Twitter and stuff.
Yeah, Field Runners 2 is basically a tower defense game. Now, as you guys probably know, I'm not a big tower defense kind of guy, but somehow, some reason, Field Runners is a series that is near and dear to my heart. And I think it's because of just the way that the game is created and kind of made and stuff. And it's different from most tower defense games in such a way that you actually use your weaponry to create paths in which, you know, your enemies actually go through. So, like, let's say the enemies need to go from left to right. You basically use your turrets and have them act as walls and actually kind of pelt them as they're running through the maze. And you kind of have to create this maze that they have to go through. So it's really interesting conceptually. And there's other kinds of challenges too. It's not just people running and stuff. There's also planes. There's vehicles that make your enemies like run faster and all that stuff, go through the maze faster.
Sounds like there's a level of depth.
Yeah, there actually is.
Different from other tower defense games.
Yeah, that's one thing that I really like about it. But the other thing that I really liked about the series is that just a slight change in the environment can affect your strategy like pretty dramatically. And one thing that they really did really well in the second game is that they made the actual game frenetic. Like, they're just not gonna like walk to their deaths anymore. Some of them actually start at running speed and stuff like that. And the pick up and play nature of it is still pretty freaking easy. It's just the strategy element of it is really interesting, because most tower defense games, it's just like, okay, we'll prevent everybody from the left side going to the right side and stuff like that. But they added more modes in the second game that actually allows for more kind of creativity. Like, for example, there's a mode where it's basically a survival mode where the AI is just going to throw as much enemies as possible at you, and you need to kill about 200 of them in order to survive and stuff. Or you have like a time limit, like let's say you have 2 minutes to kill as many, to actually go through all the waves of enemies as possible. And I think the best part of it too is that they actually added items that you can use, so you can freeze time. You can also use like smart bombs, so you'll explode like a set radius of people and stuff like that, and also new towers that you can use and stuff, which is always fun.
That sounds like a pretty interesting game.
Yeah, and it's a universal app, so basically if you buy it for the iPhone, you have it for the you have like a special version already made for the iPad. So, and it looks really, really good. I mean, we're talking about like a game that they didn't make a game like immediately, like the year after. Like, Field Runners was probably one of the first games to ever come out as an iPhone app.
So, like, that's 2007.
Yeah, that's how long this fucking they made. That's how long the gap is between that game and this. And I think that, It shows how good this game is and stuff. And of course, the original is still there, and I'm pretty sure it's cheaper. So, I mean, definitely. And by the way, the original, it only started with one map, but they've updated it so that it has more than one map and stuff like that. So, it's pretty cool.
Sounds like a cool little tower defense game.
Yeah.
Unique.
Yeah, definitely unique. Let's see. What else have I been up to? I've also been packing.
Why don't you tell them about that? I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so basically, like I mentioned before, that I am packing and stuff. So I basically bought like 20 office boxes and stuff, and I just piled maybe 5 boxes with all my DVDs, Blu-rays, and 360 and PS3 games in there. So yeah, so that's been pretty interesting. It's quite a process packing and stuff, and I know I'm gonna hate like unpacking it and stuff, but I'm getting there. I'm looking at all the stuff that I have right now, and I still need to get bubble wrap for the dishes and all that stuff. And, I'm just kind of taking it, slow by slow, slowly day by day rather and stuff. So that's kind of like what that is. Let me see. What else have I been up to? Same thing, Disneyland every single weekend and stuff.
Yay!
Of course, I saw Batman. You guys already know that, and we'll definitely talk about that later. And, one thing. I've been into Netflix a lot.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, what I've been doing is I've been trying to kind of, like, rediscover my childhood in a way. So I've been watching a lot of Jim Henson's Storyteller, and I don't know if you've ever seen that.
Oh, those are fucking awesome.
Yeah. I never saw the Greek one, so I have no opinion on those. But the ones with John Hurt are absolutely fantastic. It's definitely one of my favorite series.
The Greek ones are weak.
Yeah, I figured as much.
See, there's a difference when you get into Greek mythology as opposed to fairy tales.
Sure.
Even if you read like Grimm's fairy tales as opposed to a Greek myth,
mm-hmm.
the fairy tales have a certain atmosphere.
Right.
As opposed to a Greek myth. Like, they're more mystical, I guess, or mysterious as opposed to a Greek myth.
Right. Did you know that they actually have a comic series based off of that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it's on Comixology. They actually have a sale right now.
Nice.
Yeah, so basically, they have one story that Anthony Minghella actually finished. And mind you, this comic series is actually based off of the John Hurt one, not the Greek one. Thank goodness. But yeah, so it's based off of that. And so, yeah, I've been watching that. And something that I've been doing when I've been eating like a lot of dinners and stuff like that is actually watch Mythbusters. And I don't know why I never got into that series, but now I'm like full on like, all right, I got dinner. I'm going to sit down, hunker down and actually eat, you know, my dinner and stuff and then watch like an episode of Mythbusters and stuff. So definitely like a lot of fun. And lastly, I did get to see With Great Power, the Stan Lee story yesterday.
How was that?
It's pretty good. It is a little bit personal, but it's not as personal as I'd want it to be. Oh. I mean, it just shows him, you know, like just, it is more so the story of Stan Lee, the guy who basically was, you know, wrote all these really cool stories at Marvel as opposed to, you know, like his personal life and stuff like that. I mean, they did touch upon that and I think it was very well balanced, but I just couldn't figure out why I thought it was only okay. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it had pretty good insight of like what he did and stuff like that. And, you know, like his relationship with his wife, his daughter and all that stuff. And they have like archive footage. I don't know. I think I was just kind of like meh by the whole thing, even though it was interesting, mind you. So, but that wasn't on Netflix. That was on Amazon Prime Video, whatever. So, yeah. So, how about you? So, what's new with you?
One thing. If you're going to watch Netflix documentaries real quick,
mm-hmm.
I watched one a few weeks ago called Special When Lit.
Okay.
It's about pinball.
Oh, okay. It's
a very good documentary. I think it delves into kind of the cult status that pinball's in at the moment. And explores
at the moment. So, this is a current movie.
Yeah. It's from like 2010. Not 2009, let's be fair. Pinball, the status of pinball has not changed since then.
Sure.
So it is a very interesting film.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you'd enjoy it. It's very quirky, too, so.
Okay. But, So what else have you been up to?
What have I been up to? I'll talk a little bit about what I've been watching on Netflix.
Sure.
But I want to talk about what I've been playing a little bit. I told you on the phone my big thing, other than Batman Arkham City.
Yeah.
And Soul Calibur 5, which mm-hmm. we don't need to talk to. It's Star Ocean, the Second Evolution.
Yes.
Yes, yes. And you and I were talking about, what was a couple weeks ago, about how this game and several other Square Enix games need to be on PSN so we could download on the Vita.
Mm-hmm.
I really think this game needs to be on PSN because I have to get a PSP and buy the UMD and all that. And
I know, it's such a pain in the butt. Like, what's going on, Square Enix? Why aren't your shit like on PSN to be able to freaking download? Come on.
I mean, they have Classic Heroes on there, mediocre game, but not Star Ocean. So
I know, right?
So there you go. But I recommend it. It's you can find it off Amazon. They have it there for about $15, and it's worth it.
Right, right.
And you know what? I played this game in 1999, when it first mm-hmm. came out. I call it the trilogy of 99, in the summer of 99. There were three big games that summer that I played through. Mm-hmm. Lunar, that game, and Street Fighter Alpha 3.
Oh, Jesus.
I played those three games, and I think Alpha 3, being a fighting game, was kind of spread out through the whole summer.
Mm-hmm.
Lunar was first, and I had some difficulty. Then I moved on to Star Ocean, and I had wonderful memories. So I bought the remake of when it first came out, but the UMD broke for whatever mm-hmm. reason.
Oh, that sucks.
And I was just waiting for it to come on PSN, and I decided, fuck it, I want to play this game again. And I have to say, it held up very well.
That's good.
very, very well. If you play any version of the game, I mean, if you want to buy the PlayStation 1 version for collector's reasons, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
This is the best version. It has all kinds of extra content. Voice acting, of course, Alex.
Okay.
The voice acting, I have to admit, though, it's probably the weakest link in this port, a little bit. Voice acting for the main characters is good,
mm-hmm.
but with, like, NPCs, it can get really, really bad.
Oh, I could imagine.
Yeah. But you gotta say, one of the most interesting performances is of the main character, Claude.
Mm-hmm.
Claude is this kind of really laid-back, nice guy, you know. He does have, you know, a little bit of a father issue, lives under his father's shadow.
Right.
You know, but overall, he's a very positive guy. Of all people to voice him, though, Spike Spencer. For those that don't know, he's also the U.S., the English voice actor for Shinji Ikari in Evangelion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of funny contrasting those two roles.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Because I'm so used to hearing him scream a lot.
Ah! Whatever.
You killed my friend!
You killed my friend! Ah!
Oscar!
Oscar!
Ray! And this one, he gets pissed off, but I don't think he has quite screamed in that level. But, you know, they have voice acting, they have some anime cutscenes, private actions and stuff, so...
Okay, it's still basically Star Ocean.
Yeah, it's the best one, though. I think it's the most fulfilling of the series because it's packed with more content and there's a lot more to do than mm-hmm. even the newer ones.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you know, like one of the things I was telling you is there's different party members. You can go the game with just the two main characters, Claude and Reyna, and just beat the game that way. Mm-hmm. Or you can recruit, you know, certain party members, and if you get certain ones, you can't mm-hmm. get that other one, if that makes sense.
Right.
So there's a lot of replay value, plus you choose between Claude and Reyna.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll see things, if you choose play through Claude's playthrough, you'll see things through his perspective, get a party member that you can only get through Claude's game, and, you know, make decisions based on him. Reyna, the same thing, and so there's a lot of replay value to this game.
Right, okay.
So, it's still one of my favorites, and if you ever get a chance, I mean, you know.
Jesus, I don't know when I'm going to get a chance.
No, probably never, so. Yeah. You know what, it's one of those games where I said, fuck my backlog.
Wow, okay.
Except for Batman.
And of course, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, yeah. But,
so, anything else, dude?
You know, I'm still going through Buffy on Netflix. Mm-hmm. I really like this series.
Yeah.
I only take a break, and this happens with every series I watch, is I'll cram like several seasons, and then I'll take a break,
mm-hmm.
and then I'll get back into it.
Right.
And I think Buffy's a very interesting show, specifically if you're even a fan of like Firefly. It's interesting to see how Joss Whedon progressed as a writer.
I see, yeah.
It's really fascinating. Like, the first season of Buffy is it's weak.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you still get, you know, glimpses of Josh Whedon's great dialogue, but it's very rare. And what's shitty about the first season is all the characters are just archetypes.
Mm-hmm.
They're not characters. They're not, you know, you can have an archetype, a character be an archetype, but then flesh out. He'll still have that archetype structure.
Okay, now I know that, you know, this was kind of based off of the movie. Is it based off of anything else?
The Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie?
Yeah.
Actually, there's an interesting story real quick to that. Josh Whedon wrote the original script to the film. His version was a lot darker.
Oh, okay.
Of course, guess what happened? Executives got hold of it, thought that his dialogue was kind of funny, made it into a comedy.
Oh.
So.
But are there a lot of elements from the movie, though, that got carried over to the TV show? Mind you, I'm not familiar with either, so.
No. In fact, the TV show acknowledges the original script as content, you know, of the movie, but not the actual film.
I see.
Because there's differences. You know, like Donald Sutherland played Buffy's original Watcher.
Mm-hmm.
In it, and he ended in, and the Watchers in the film were supernatural beings,
sure,
but in the TV series they're just regular people who train slayers,
right?
And that's one of the many changes. So I mean, it just recognizes that,
right?
You know, and like one of the big differences is there's a confrontation at her prom with the main vampire,
mm-hmm.
and she kind of defeats him, walks away. In the original script, the school burnt down.
Oh, that's funny.
And they acknowledge that when Buffy goes to her new high school.
So it's
a very good series. I think the thing is just slog through that first season. It's not very long. So thankfully, if anyone wants to watch it, it's on Netflix. The second season is just, it's weird because you watch the first season. Sometimes you watch TV series where the second season gradually improves.
Mm-hmm.
What's funny about the second season, it's just a complete 360.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit, it's like, you know, oh, first season shitty, then all of a sudden, whoa!
Yeah. Well, one of the only episode that I saw from Buffy the Vampire Slayer was when they got cursed and they all started singing and shit. Like, every single dialogue was a song and stuff, which I thought was pretty hilarious.
I haven't gotten that one. That's in season 6.
Yeah, you got a long ways to go, buddy.
No, not really. I'm actually on the 10th episode of season 5.
Oh, okay.
So I've got a little bit more to go. But Josh Whedon does some very surreal things in this series.
Okay.
You know, he one of the best episodes is called, I believe, Hush. And it's one that he directed. And only about 10% of the episode has dialogue.
Okay.
And the rest of it is just complete, you know, just visual.
Okay.
You know, it's funny because when you watch the series, you could just see, you know, what's funny about Buffy is there's a lot of depth to it.
Mm-hmm.
And you see why this guy is praised.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to admit, I have not seen Firefly.
Okay.
I know a lot of people, you know, all my friends, they've seen Firefly. They go, you need to fucking watch or lynch your ass.
Right.
But I'd rather watch through Buffy and see, you know, where Firefly kind of came from. Not that they're connected, but to see, you know, I like to see the creative progression.
Sure.
Of writers and stuff, so you
right.
know, and of course, what's funny too is he did the spinoff of Angel, and I watched the pilot of that, which came on at the same time of the fourth season, and the pilot was far better than the Buffy pilot.
Mm-hmm.
So it just shows, you know, but Angel's first season is far better than Buffy's first season. So it just
right.
shows the progression of Josh Whedon, and then look at where he's at now. You know, he's writing pretty high.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Like directing, like, and writing Avengers. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny. His next film is an adaptation of Much Ado About Nothing, that Shakespeare play.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very small film.
Wait, he's not working on Star Trek 2?
No, that's J.J. Abrams.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. J.J. Abrams is working on Star Trek 2.
Right. I forgot about that. My bad.
It's all good. It's all good.
Yeah.
So I got to say, Alex, I'm liking that series. That's why I love Netflix. Just a
yeah.
full library of TV series.
Yeah. And I know that both of us have actually been indulging in a lot of the New 52s and stuff like that. Like, you know, the New 52s are basically like this, you know, kind of new-ish, you know, comic book series that DC created. Again, like, we're gonna delve into this later, but yeah, you've been into, like, what is it? Like, freaking Justice League America, Aquaman.
Justice League Dark.
Not America.
Oh, no, I love both of them.
Okay, because I was like, why'd you correct me then?
No, I was just saying Dark as well, I meant.
Okay.
Not necessarily a correction. I do apologize.
Okay.
But yeah, I you know, I'm reading that. The other day I got into World's Finest, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great companion piece to Earth 2, which is one of the best titles in the New 52.
Oh, Jesus.
Like,
I'm trying to avoid like picking up as many comics as possible. I think I purchased like probably 30 comic books over the past two, three weeks or something like
Jesus,
that.
Jesus, Alex.
Because Comixology is just so easy to, like, get comics from, and I'm just like, I gotta get the next one. I gotta get the next one. It's like crack.
It's the serial format.
Yeah, I know. It's dangerous. Dangerous!
Yeah, at least with TV, you know, as long as you have the channel, you can watch it for free.
Right. And yeah, that's the thing, too. It's like, and this is going to sound really ridiculous because, of course, our show is called Gamer Horizon, but I haven't been gaming a lot lately. I think it's because of the lull that we're in the video game industry, you know? Like, there's nothing really, like good coming out. I mean, yeah, you can say Dyad, but it's like, for me, it's like, I'd much rather spend my money on, like, a big blockbuster game, like Assassin's Creed 3 and stuff. It's almost as if every single game that has come out and stuff has been kind of null and void because of, you know, the anticipation that I have with, like, Assassin's Creed 3, you know?
Yeah, the only ones for me, the only one that I'm going to probably be talking about is hopefully I'll be getting Kingdom Hearts, because I'm a Kingdom Hearts guy.
Yeah, I've been trying to find a change of heart for that game, but I don't know, it's just, to me, like, I am just, you know, hungry for like a full console like Kingdom Hearts game. I think it's about damn time. Instead, we're forced to basically wait for like Final Fantasy 13 Versus and stuff, Versus 13, which, you know, who knows when that's going to come out. I mean, heck, the next generation of consoles is almost here, and it's not even out yet. Holy crap.
Well, there's been a lot of Final Fantasy rumors going on. I'm not going to go into them, but I'm just saying, you know, about 15 and stuff like that. So,
well, you know, like,
so who knows what the fuck's going to happen with that.
Square Enix basically said, no, it's not canned. And, you know, it still exists, so we're going to see about that. So, anyway, before we start talking about the stuff that we're going to be talking about, which is all things Batman, I just wanted to kind of give our audience kind of like an outline of what the hell is going to happen. So first things first, we're going to be talking about the comic series. And the comic series is very important because without the comic series, we're not going to be able to see, we weren't going to be able to see like any of the video games or even the movies and all that stuff, even right. The TV shows. Even
and, and when we talk about the comics, I'll give a very, very brief like evolution of the Batman franchise.
Sure.
That I gave you yesterday, so.
Right. And then after that, we're going to be talking about the video games that Anthony and I played and stuff. Like, I know that there's, you know, you guys just really want us to talk about that, you know, awesome Batman and Robin and Batman Forever game, you know, for the PlayStation and whatnot. But we're not going to be doing that because we didn't play it. So
Batman and Robin does not exist in any way, shape or form to me.
Yeah. And then right after that. And we're going to basically kind of say that it is going to be spoiler territory. We're going to be spending some time talking about the, as I guess people are calling it, the Nolanverse of Batman now. Basically, Christopher Nolan's trilogy from beginning to end, you know, not spoiler free. We're going to spoil the hell out of all three movies if you haven't watched any of them. So if you, you know... So if you haven't watched any of them, we'll basically tell you like when, you know, when to come back and stuff like that.
And we had two unique experiences. You got to see it, you know, regular, right?
Yeah.
And I got to see IMAX. My first IMAX.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, as far as The Dark Knight Rises is concerned, like, yeah, I'm going to see it in IMAX again and stuff, but that'll be for later. And then of course, right after all those, definitely not a Batman segment, but we're going to be talking about all the letters that you've been sending us over the past few days and past few weeks and stuff for our party chat segment. So, Anthony, are you ready?
Yes, sir.
All right, then let's get on with the comic books. So, I think of the two of us, you are more knowledgeable about the Batman lore, so take it away.
Okay, so Batman first premiered, came out in... the year's a little rusty. 1938, 1939?
Sure, whatever.
Think 1939 in Detective Comics 27.
Mm-hmm.
And what a lot of people don't realize was a lot of comics back then, Action Comics, Detective Comics, they were anthologies.
Okay.
So what they did was they had a lot, you know, they would have mystery stories and, you know, other stuff in there. And Batman was considered kind of a masked mystery story back then.
So basically it's not just Batman in these books. It's also different characters, right?
Right, right.
Okay.
Right. So, so what would happen in with this is the original Batman was conceived as a rather dark character. And it was, if you look at the old Batmans, they're more in par with like the old Dick Tracys and all those old pulp, you know, kind of comic strip characters.
Sure.
So they're more like, they're more in that vein. And they're not really, they're not as superhero-y as we relate to him now.
Okay.
So it was a very dark comic. Batman was a pretty ruthless character back in his early days. He even used guns and shot people.
Mm-hmm.
He killed a lot of his enemies.
Yeah.
Which we know he doesn't anymore.
Right.
So, essentially, he was a very different character. His origin was the same. Some of the characters were there. Commissioner Gordon has been there since the beginning.
Okay.
You know, in fact, it's kind of funny. If you read Detective Comics 27, it starts with him talking with his friend Bruce Wayne, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking about the Batman. And it doesn't reveal to the... there's a plot twist, and this doesn't spoil anything, at the end of Detective Comics 27 that Commissioner Gordon, who was telling his friend Bruce Wayne about the Batman, is really the Batman, you know? Mm-hmm. So
right.
That's not a plot twist, but you know what I mean.
Back in the day, it was.
Yeah, yeah. It was pretty cool how they did that, uh-huh. So... So he evolved, and then they introduced Robin, and the stories got a little bit more superhero-y, of course. But
before
still-
you continue, though, did they establish his origin story in Detective Comics also?
I believe it was it Detective Comics? I think so, yeah.
Okay.
I think so, yes. Yes, and they reiterated the origin story several times. So.
Okay, when he probably finally got his own comic, right?
Yeah, when he got his own comic, too, it was similar to what they did in Detective Comics. There was one main difference, though. Okay. What I mean by similar is, you know how they had various stories?
Mm-hmm.
They had various stories, but they had, like, instead of, like, just one, like, single story or a part of a story, mm-hmm. they had, like, four different Batman stories.
Oh, okay.
So, like, I have Batman 1 on my iPhone,
mm-hmm.
and it has the first Joker story, then it has a Hugo Strange story,
mm-hmm.
then it has the first Catwoman story,
right.
and then it has a second Joker story at the end.
Okay.
So, you know, that's just how they did things back then.
I see.
Essentially.
So, anyways.
So with that said, it got a little bit more superhero-y, and then we got into the 50s, and like I told you, in the 50s, superheroes kind of died.
Right.
And there's a lot of reasons for that, but mm-hmm. Basically, let's just say they died for a while, and what happened was horror comics, romance comics got really popular.
Mm-hmm.
And at this time, Batman got really, really goofy.
Okay.
Okay, and I was telling you this, that he, you know, if you look at old Batman covers from the 50s, it's like Batman trapped on, you know, dinosaur planet, Joker, you know, fucking going to the clown dimension, and, you know, all this, you know, and they introduce characters like Batmite, which is an imp in a Batman suit, or a pixie or some shit, I don't know.
Oh, gosh.
The stories got ridiculous.
Okay.
And then they even got more ridiculous when, because of all those horror comics,
mm-hmm.
there's all these Senate hearings similar to the video game hearings.
Uh-huh.
And they implemented the comics code,
uh-huh.
which was a lot more stricter than the video game rating system, and, you know, put a lot of limits. So Batman got really goofy.
Okay.
Even more campier. And then there was the superhero revival
mm-hmm.
in the late 50s, early 60s, you know, thanks to Marvel and what DC was doing, and, you know, and then the Adam West show came on. The show got from goofy to campy. Yes, there is a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. He wasn't on, like, Dinosaur Planet, but it'd be like Joker trying to steal diamonds or something very simplistic like that.
Uh-huh.
And then there were writers like Dennis O'Neill and stuff who looked back at the older ones and said, like, why can't Batman be like that again?
Mm-hmm.
So Denny O'Neill, I don't remember how he goes by, he's a very prolific writer. He was known for being one of the grittiest writers for comic books.
Mm-hmm.
And he crossed boundaries
mm-hmm.
that you didn't at that time in terms of content.
Mm-hmm.
And he took Batman and he made him dark again.
Right.
And he's the guy who basically, I believe he created Ra's al Ghul. He's known for the Joker Fish story,
mm-hmm.
which was also, you know, adapted in the Batman animated series.
Mm-hmm.
But still, you know, sales were a little sluggish. And then, you know, Batman was superhero but dark. And then you get into the 80s and Dennis O'Neill became the editor. And that's when things really changed, specifically with Frank Miller, where he took Batman from being a dark superhero into just being dark.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of writers would follow in that direction. You know, writers like Grant Morrison with, Arkham Asylum, A Serious Place on Serious Earth. This was written years before the video game was even conceived. So, mm-hmm. has nothing to do with that for those that may not know.
Sure.
Grant Morrison, Alan Moore's The Grittiest, The Killing Joke,
mm-hmm.
which is, I don't know if you ever read that, but that is probably one of the most disturbing Batman stories ever written.
I'm actually planning to get that at some point.
Yeah, it is. You will be shocked at the content in that. The Joker, it's just a very, it's an awesome story, but it's very disturbing.
Right.
You know, and pretty much into the direction he is today. And there's kind of like this balance between, you know, darker Batman and superhero dark Batman. Mm-hmm. You know, Batman and the Justice League. And
well, I've stuff. Always kind of assumed that because the city is called Gotham City, that it was going to be all dark and gothic and all that stuff. For, you know, for, like, the remainder of, like, the Batman storyline and stuff. Because it makes a lot more sense to treat Gotham that way. And by proxy, Batman. So, it's somehow hard to imagine that there was a goofy slash, you know, kind of silly side of Batman prior to, you know, the our exposure of, you know, like, especially from the kids that grew up with Nolan's Batman or Tim Burton's Batman. You know, it's difficult to kind of see the goofy, you know, side of, you know, the original series and stuff. That's what I'm saying.
It's kind of funny, though, because DC did not DC, but, you know, other media did re-explore the campier side of Batman with the cartoon Batman the Brave and the Bold, which I like because it is what it is.
That's the current series, right?
It was the current series. It's no longer around. Uh-huh. What's cool about that one is it's not trying to be another Batman the Animated Series.
Mm-hmm.
It's trying to be, you know...
tongue-in-cheek, kind of?
Yeah, it's trying to be, you know, take the sillier side of Batman, which actually, if you watch it, it works. And it does some crazy stuff. Like, there's an episode with the Batmite imp where he talks about alternate... He talks about alternate versions of Batman, and one of the ones, and this is actually based off actual material, there was a Batman manga in Japan where his enemy was a dead man, and it was animated in a manga style.
Oh, dear.
With purposely bad dubbing. It is one of the most hilarious interpretations of Batman to ever watch. It's a good show for what it is. Don't, you know, it is. I know you're not keen on that, but it's funny that they're still exploring that side while still doing, you know, you got the, on the whole other level, you got the Frank Miller, Nolan stuff and things like that, so.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, to me, the original Batman animated series, the one with, you know, that Bruce Timm actually helped create and stuff, and the one with Paul Dini, I thought that was, like, the pinnacle of Batman animated series, because it's difficult to top that series.
No. Brave and the Bold doesn't top it. It's not trying to, though.
Well, that's the thing. It's just begs the question, then. Why the hell would I waste my time with it?
I wasted my time because it's good to see that side of Batman, so... Yeah. The goofier, campier side.
If I wanted to see that, I'd friggin' watch, like, yeah. Adam West.
Oh, it's better than Adam West, but we'll not go there.
Okay.
Animated series, though, is epic, so that's the Batman comics, essentially, so.
That's it?
So that's the history. Well, I could go into it, but we'd be here for about 6 hours.
Well, okay, so... Why don't you explain what happened recently? And I kind of hinted that earlier and stuff like that. Like, what is the New 52? What the hell is that?
Okay, the New 52 was a reboot of the entire DC universe. It's not an alternate timeline. It's an actual reboot.
Okay.
And numerous reasons for this reboot. As much as I like DC now and I prefer them over Marvel, I cannot deny that DC has a messy continuity.
Okay.
It has a very messy. And there's been attempts to fucking clean up.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been several attempts at reboots. And a lot of the reboots were tried to do were to keep the original continuity intact,
mm-hmm.
but still rebooting it, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
And what the New 52 did was just fucking clean it up.
Mm-hmm.
While there's still some Batman stories and Green Lantern stories in the old continuity still in there, most of it, like characters like Superman, have been completely revamped.
Mm-hmm.
And Batman is no different.
Okay. So do you want to kind of go over, like, what happened, like, leading up to, like, the New 52 Batman? Because I'll be honest, like, my exposure to the New 52s was through you, and you basically said, well, I think the newest Batman is really good. Scott Snyder, who's the writer, is actually really excellent, and if there's any time to start collecting Batman comics, it would have to be right now.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Scott Snyder's Batman, it's, you know, unlike some of the New 52s like Action Comics where it starts off with Superman, it kind of continues where Batman is mm-hmm. at the moment. But it's not, you know, a story where you need to know previous continuity. You need to know his origin, of course.
Right.
Which everyone does, but aside from that, you know, you don't need to go into his, you know, past storylines too much.
Right, you don't need to kind of restate that, yeah, his parents got killed because of something and all that stuff, and Joe Chill killed them, or, you know, blah, blah, blah. You don't need to know that. I mean, you do need to know that, but it's like, you don't need to redo the story. You don't need to reiterate it in issue number one.
Right, and in fact, what the new Batman does smart, very wisely, I should say, is it introduces a new antagonist.
Okay.
and that is the Court of the Owls and a character by the name of Talon.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably, I think, probably the biggest of the New 52 storylines, the longest one.
Mm-hmm.
It's 11 issues.
Yeah.
And you read them all. And I have to say, if we were to go by our Gamerizen scale, I would give it a 5 out of 5. Because I think it was well-paced. I think it was well-plotted. I have one complaint in the last three issues, and you probably know what complaint that is.
Mm-hmm.
The backup stories.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are these backup stories that me and you, and we talked about this, that we both agree that were rather pointless.
Yeah, they were kind of weak, too.
Yeah, yeah. There was really no point to them.
And actually, let me backtrack here for a second, too. Isn't it funny that Iron Man's butler is named Jarvis, and that Alfred's dad's name is also Jarvis?
Yeah, that is funny.
It's like really weird. It's like Jarvis Pennyworth. You know, it's like whatever.
Oh, shit. I don't know.
But yeah, the backstory is all about Jarvis Pennyworth and how he's connected to this whole thing that's currently happening with Batman from issue 1 to issue 11. But let's not dwell on that, because, I mean, obviously that's kind of the wrinkle in the whole Batman comic and stuff. But personally, though, like, okay, as a person who only collected a few comics here and there, like, I know I forgot what the name of the storyline is, but the Iron Man storyline where he became an alcoholic and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Demon in a Bottle.
Demon in a Bottle. I collected that. It was back in the 90s, right? 80s. Okay. I collected that. And X-Men Volume 2 with Jim Lee, I collected that too. For being the very first comic book that I've read since Scott Pilgrim, you know, versus whatever, you know, and like a serious comic, like the New 52's Batman, like the writing and the pacing of it on a per page basis is just absolutely fantastic. Like that is like probably one of the most engrossing like storylines like that I've ever seen, like in, you know, like in comics, as far as I'm concerned. And mind you, I'm not a comic book like aficionado, not like Anthony and stuff, but I'm coming from, you know, storylines where, you know, from video games and movies and, you know, and books and all that stuff. And I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt, that storyline is pretty cool. And the way that he, you know, that number one, like issue number one introduces, you know, Batman and stuff like that. And the just the current state of Gotham City is absolutely freaking fantastic.
The pacing, I love the pacing, because when you have good pacing, you know when you're in the middle of the story, and you know when the story's kind of building up, and then when it's reaching its climax, and when it finally, you know, starts building to the conclusion, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that. And what Scott Snyder did was he really did a good job of building to the final battle in that storyline. And then that final battle, even though, you know, in the context of pages may not seem very long, felt like a very fulfilling final battle.
And in some cases, too, what's really interesting about this, in retrospect, there's some similarities, mild similarities, between what happens here and what happens to the latest Batman film. Just to kind of, I'm not going to basically spoil it right now, but I'll make this parallelization again, like, once we do touch on The Dark Knight Rises later and stuff. I don't know if you're kind of getting my gist here.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that the Court of Owls, and mind you guys, like, the Court of Owls did not exist in any sort of, you know, previous, you know, iteration of the comic book. This is a wholly original bad guy that they created, but this group belongs so well, you know, in the Batman franchise and stuff, that it's really difficult to kind of, you know, to kind of not believe that, yeah, this is brand new. This is, you know, Scott Snyder and, you know, Greg Capullo just freaking pulled it out of their ass, and here you go. It's like, it's great.
The Court of the Owls fit in the Rogues Gallery of Batman.
Court of the Owls, right?
Court of the Owls. Yeah. Well, whatever.
It sounds like you, like, the first time you said that, I thought you said the Court of the Elves, and I'm like, what?
Oh,
freaking
shit.
Legolas, like, with his arrow and shit, like, hitting Batman.
A bunch of little elves fighting. You're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it was like, Court of the Elves? What the fuck are you talking about?
I also like the symbolism, too, of the bat, of the owl killing the bat and stuff like that, too, that he eats. A lot of symbolism there. Let's talk about year one real quick.
Well, before that, I wanted to kind of plug the New 52's, you know, like, series and stuff on Comixology. Because I primarily read all my comics through Comixology and stuff. And unfortunately, we don't have an affiliate code, so we don't get credit for any sale. But I wanted to let everybody know that Batman, as of right now, the number one and stuff, and I think most of the New 52s are
all like, the New 52s.
The number one episode, the number one issues of all of them are 99 cents. Now, it could very well be that by the time this gets out and stuff, that the 99 cent deal is gone, but check it out anyway, because you really don't want to miss this. It's a great storyline, it's a great series, and you know, it's reading, and it's easier reading than reading a book and stuff. And it's, you know, Greg Capullo's artwork is absolutely fantastic. And I we do want to hear anybody out there who hasn't picked it up but decides to pick it up because of what we talked about here. Definitely write us at partychat@gamehorizon.com because we want to hear what you guys think of it and stuff, and if you guys got hooked or whatever. And mind you, you don't need an iOS device. You can download the Comixology app on Amazon, you know, at the Kindle Fire, and you can also read it on their website. So
I believe Android has it.
And Android has it, too, so you have no excuse.
Okay. Oh, and one thing. This is real brief. Read Aquaman. That's it. Okay. Anyway.
This is not an Aquaman episode, dude.
That's why I said it for like 2 seconds. I had to say it for 2 seconds. Dark Knight. Not Dark Knight Returns. I was going to say
Year One.
Yeah, Year One is great.
Okay.
I love Year One. That is also on Comixology, and it's about $8, and the trade paperback is 20, so make your choice, folks.
Yeah, it's an individual comics. It's not the compiled edition. I think the compiled edition is 20, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is all four comic books. They're separate. Doesn't take more than 30 minutes to freaking read all four of them. It's really good. I mean, yeah, I definitely recommend it. And also, if you're actually a fan of the Nolanverse stuff, you'll see a lot of kind of parallels and kind of derivations from Year One, you know, that he kind of applied into, you know, his own Batman and stuff like that. So it's going to be really interesting, you know, especially like hearing people's reactions of, you know, what the, you know, what people think of the comic books versus, you know, like the Nolan series and stuff. I mean, both are great, but yeah. I really enjoyed Batman Year One. I mean, that's Batman Year One, in case people don't know, is the origin of Batman retold. So,
and one thing about Year One, there DC has their DC Universe animated movies.
Mm-hmm.
Last fall, they released an adaptation of Year One.
Is that on like Netflix or Amazon or anything?
It's not on Netflix, but you can buy off iTunes, PSN, I believe Xbox too.
Can you rent it on Amazon?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, I'll check it after this podcast.
And it is, I will say, I watched it last weekend and I had read Year One like the day before.
Mm-hmm.
It is pretty much, there's some very, and I told Alex this, there's some very, like, very minor differences, and I mean tiny ones. Mm-hmm. That aren't even worth nitpicking. Like, some scenes take place before the other than they should, but that's not really a big deal. It's probably one of the most accurate adaptation of a comic I have ever seen.
Is it Kevin Conroy that voices it?
No, but the guy who... No. But the guy who voices him does a good job. He plays a younger Bruce Wayne.
Okay.
I think Kevin Conroy, as much as... You know, he is the best voice of Batman, but he's more suited for a more experienced Batman.
Okay.
I feel this guy nails a younger, more inexperienced Bruce Wayne, and Bryan Cranston from Breaking Bad plays Jim Gordon, so you can't go wrong with that.
Whoa, you know, that's like, I mean, he looks like Commissioner Gordon already, so kind of.
And one thing about Year One before we conclude is, not, I don't consider a Batman story per se. I consider a Jim Gordon story.
I see.
So there you go.
Okay. All right, now that the comic books are done, let's jump into the video games. So, I don't know how you want to do this, because we played, like, a lot of games between us. So, how do you want to do this?
Oh, let's go chronologically.
Okay. So, let's talk about Batman for the NES, which is made by Sunsoft. So, what are your memories of this game?
I remember being fucking hard.
Dude, that was so hard. Like, even the second level, that freaking game was hard.
It was a good game, though. It was kind of a, like... It was a platformer, wasn't it?
It was kind of a platformer. It's basically, you're Batman, of course, and you have the ability to punch people or use any of your special weapons. You had the ability to kind of, you know, climb a la, you know, like Ninja Gaiden and stuff, like jump from one air, you know, one section to the other. But it's not as graceful or as fast as Ryu Hayabusa from Ninja Gaiden and stuff. It's actually takes you a while to do that. And they, I remember in the first level where you're supposed to do that on the edges of some of the platforms and stuff, that there are like mines that basically run around and stuff. And even like a slight touch, even though you're not even touching them, like even if you're at the edge and they run into that section, you still get damage from them. And mind you, like, this game is very brutal when it comes to damage. It's not totally unrelenting.
It was hard.
Yeah.
It's considered one of the hardest NES games.
Yeah, isn't it that the Joker can like kill you with like one shot or something like that?
Yeah, I think you did say, and I'm pretty sure he had a life bar, or was it a one hit game?
I don't know. Who, the Batman?
Yeah.
No, it had a life bar.
Okay, yeah, okay.
But it was pretty freaking useless because there was only 8 bars. So you get hit 8 times, you're dead.
You know what? That reminds me, if I remember correctly, there are enemies who could take like half of your life.
Pretty much, yeah.
The game was a brutal game.
It was definitely a brutal game. And I really like the levels, though. Like, the way that they used the lack of color to build color and interest in the environment. I thought that was really brilliant. And mind you, there's a lot of bad guys that are not even in the movies. I mean, this is technically, I guess, based off the movies, but it's so loosely based off the movies that there's a lot of things that happen in this movie that didn't happen in this game that didn't happen in the movie, so.
Yeah, I think they just added shit, because it's a game.
Yeah, totally. It's a cool game, though. Mind you, it's from the guys who brought us Blaster Master, so that should tell you how difficult this game is.
Oh, fuck Blaster Master. Anyway!
So, the next game that we both played, and I don't know if you, like, ever since yesterday when we talked about this, if you even spent some time actually, like, kind of remembering, like, what this is. It's basically Batman Returns for the Super Nintendo.
Okay.
Do you remember this at all?
No, I don't.
Okay, so Batman Returns is a lot more closely tied in to the movie. In fact, you see Michael Keaton in it, you see, you know, Michelle Pfeiffer in it, you see Danny DeVito in it. Of course, the voices aren't there. Like, they're not using the voice acting and stuff like that from the movies and stuff. But definitely some of the live action stuff. Like, you see, like, in the first scene is, you know, you see the bat signal, and then you see, you know, what do you call this? Like, Michael Keaton to stand up and stuff. And it's definitely Michael Keaton. The game is made by Konami. And unlike the first Batman game, this one is actually a beat-em-up.
Yeah, I was looking. You know what's funny? I'm looking at it on Wikipedia.
Uh-huh.
And I believe it differed from platform to platform. It was like something like Shadowrun. And it seems like this was the case. Like, the SNES version was a beat-em-up.
Uh-huh.
Whereas I believe, like, the NES version was more of a, you know, or the 16-bit versions were more of a, you know, platforming type thing. So
right.
It's one of those cases where the ports were very different, or you can even call them ports.
Right. Yeah, that's very interesting. I'm a fan of the Super Nintendo one a lot more, though, because it definitely captured a lot of the elements of the movies and stuff. Like, it had everything. It had, like, the, you know, the Red Triangle Gang from the movie. I think the only thing it didn't have, I want to say, is Max Schreck.
Christopher
Walken character, yeah. But otherwise, you know, you get to fight against, you know, the Penguin, you get to fight against Catwoman on top of a rooftop and stuff. And it's, you know, and I think that I want to say that there's also a driving section there too. And I thought that was really, really great. Like, it was a great adaptation of the movie. And it's one of my most favorite games on the Super Nintendo as of right now.
Ah, sweet. So I never played that version, so.
You didn't?
No.
I thought you did.
I played the Genesis version.
That's why we talked. That's why we're going to talk about this, because we want to make sure that, like, all the games and stuff that we're talking about, we both played.
No, I was talking about Batman. I told you I played Batman Return of the Joker.
Well, yeah, but that's like what the Nintendo, right? Like the second game on the Nintendo.
Yeah. That's the one I played and such. So I didn't play Batman Returns. I thought I mixed up with Batman Return of the Joker.
You're getting old, man.
yeah, we are.
That's exactly what I freaking asked you yesterday.
Oh, shit. I thought you were talking about Batman Return of the Joker. Okay.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Are there any other Batman games that I don't know about? If you're going to go this route, might as well talk about the one game that you don't want to talk about, which is Batman Forever.
Oh, God. The thing was, Batman Return of the Joker, real quick, is more like the NES one. It's sure. A direct sequel, actually. And it's okay. If you want to get technical, it's a sequel to the movie because Joker rises from the grave.
Oh, Jesus.
So, but it's actually a better game. They, like, fixed a lot of the problems with the original NES. And it's from, I believe, Sunsoft as well.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
I never played that.
Yeah, so.
There's that other game, the Batman Forever game. What is that, huh?
Oh, Batman Forever. Yeah, that's... did you like that one? I did. I never played it,
but since you've broken the chain already, I'm going to force you to talk about that game.
Okay, well, let me talk about it real quick. It was when, you know, everyone thought they could make a digitized game. Remember that? Because of Mortal Kombat? You know, even Street Fighter got one. Yeah, they made it digitized, and it was a sluggish, unresponsive mess. You know, hit detection was awful. Throw a batarang, it would go through guys sometimes. Yeah, there's not really much else to say about that.
Come on, you have to describe the gameplay and all that stuff. Is it a beat 'em up? Is it a side scroller?
It's kind of a 3D game? I guess it's kind of beat 'em up-y, I guess is the closest. It's kind of hard to describe because because when you punch guys, it didn't really work. Mm-hmm. And you did rely a lot on gadgets. It's kind of a strange mess of a game. I'm sorry, that game sucks. So
who made it?
I believe Acclaim.
Oh dear,
that explains it.
Yeah, that explains a lot of things.
Now there is a game that you and I know for a fact we both played.
Sure,
let's talk about that one.
Okay, what is it?
The Adventures of Batman and Robin,
the animated series.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good game.
So, what did you think about that?
I liked that when I played it on Genesis.
That's a different game than the Super Nintendo one, which we're talking about.
No, I told you I played it on Genesis. No, I thought they were identical ports.
Okay, so what's the first level?
I remember it being like the city, and you fought against like Joker and shit. It's been a long time since. I know I played it, though.
Okay, so what's the boss?
I think one of the bosses was a giant, like, fucking Jack-in-the-Box. What was it?
Okay, so, first of all, who made that for the Genesis?
For the Genesis, okay.
Because I can tell you that the game that I played on the Super Nintendo was made by Konami.
Oh, okay, Konami.
But that doesn't necessarily apply for the animated series version. We are so prepared for this episode, gents. I'm so sorry. Like, I was assuming that, you know, Anthony and I have played, and, you know, after actually talking about it at length yesterday, that, you know, that we both played the same fucking games, but apparently not.
No, I didn't know. I didn't realize how different ports were, though.
Jesus.
Because I thought the Genesis version was, and I told you I played the Genesis version. I'm reading here, it's completely different from the SNES one.
Yep, that's what I'm saying.
Okay, so let's see. Genesis version was developed by Clockwork Tortoise, and Konami developed the SNES version. Son of a bitch, why the fuck did they do that? Oh, well.
Well, because remember that Sega actually published the Batman movie, like the one that Sunsoft developed on the Genesis. And I think Sega had exclusive publishing rights for the Sega games, and so they had to be very different. And I personally think that the Super Nintendo version of The Adventures of Batman and Robin is far superior than the Genesis one.
Okay.
Primarily because the last level of, you know... I mean, not the last level, but the last boss of the first level of, you know, the Adventures of Batman and Robin was basically you fighting against the Joker on top of that little, like, you know, like roller coaster in that one episode where I want to say it was like the mayor's son or something like that. Like, you know, when he kidnapped, he basically basically disguised as Jacko or whatever the hell. Like, right. I remember that animated series episode. Yeah. And what happened was that you had to fight like robots and stuff, like the toy soldiers from that episode and stuff. Like, it was literally like a great representation of the cartoon. Like, every single cool moment in that whole series, they equally represented in the Super Nintendo version. Hell, remember that Minotaur maze that, you know, that the Riddler trapped Batman? It's in the Super Nintendo version.
So obviously the Super Nintendo version was pretty good.
It's pretty fucking good. It was like, that was at the time, like, you know, I never thought that Batman Returns was gonna be like topped, you know, but Adventures of Batman and Robin came really close to that.
Okay.
But as far as like the visceral nature of it, like, it was, you know, like Batman Returns hands down.
I remember the Genesis version now too.
Okay.
The story was different. The main villain was Mr. Freeze in it, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and what he did was, Mr. Freeze Batman Animated was not bad though, Alex.
Okay.
It was good.
Alright.
So anyway, you're like saying that with reluctance, but you don't remember. But anyway, he goes off and he frees like all the bad guys.
Okay.
To kind of hold off Batman while he tries to freeze the city. Pretty mm-hmm. simplistic storyline, I suppose.
Right.
So basically, you just go, it's more of a run and gun type of game. If you think about it, now that I remember the gameplay, it's kind of like Shinobi, where, you know, with Shinobi, you shot, what was it, ninja stars at your enemies?
Mm-hmm.
And when they would get close to you, you would not shoot ninja stars, you would, you know, slash at them. And it had mm-hmm. a similar mechanic where, you know, Batman would shoot batarangs, and then he would punch his enemies if they got mm-hmm. close. And I thought it had pretty good level design and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was a run and gun, and I like run and gun games like that, so...
Mm-hmm.
Is it better than the SNES version? I can't say because I never played it.
I don't know. The SNES version was pretty purely like derived from the animated series, and then he did a really bang up job of representing the animated series and stuff. Because what they essentially took was they basically took the cartoons and they made levels out of the freaking storylines. I mean, you know, like the. Just imagine like being Batman fighting the Joker and like on the little roller coaster and stuff that, you know, by the way, it switches from 2D to actually 3D. And so it you know, not 3D, but, you know, mode 7, you know, it's really like if you get the chance, I would probably play it and try the Super Nintendo version because it's freaking fantastic. Beginning to end.
I have to use similar means. So,
well, yeah, emulation and stuff, because, of course, you know, freaking copyright bullshit prevents us from enjoying these games again and stuff.
Hey, they brought Star Wars onto the virtual console, I believe.
Whoop, they freaking do. It was only Star Wars. Great.
Well, I'm just saying, can't they bring Batman? So there you go.
Yeah.
That's my point.
Right. So, okay. So, obviously, Anthony and I only have three games that we have any similarities with ever that we've ever played in our entire lives. Because
the ports are so different.
Yeah, I can't. That should have been like your first assumption. Like, yeah, the ports are definitely going to be freaking different.
I didn't know that. I didn't realize that. So
because remember that the Genesis had a much faster processor than the Super Nintendo, while the Super Nintendo had the ability to like display more colors. That was the advantages of each. So that's why they couldn't really port one game from one platform to another. Hell, even like freaking Street Fighter 2, when they had it, well, Championship Edition, when they had it on both platforms, they couldn't make it the same.
Right.
Because of, you know, either the lack of color or, you know, it's just the speed is different, you know?
Oh.
So
I remember even Earthworm Jim being pretty different, so you got a point there.
Yep. So anyways, so the two most current ones that I'm pretty damn sure we both played are Arkham Asylum and Arkham City. Now,
and the ports aren't different.
And the ports aren't different. Now, I had to basically talk Anthony into actually taking up, you know, the Batman's mantle for Arkham City to have him actually play through it again. I think unanimously we can both say that Arkham Asylum is probably one of the best games this generation. Am I correct?
Arkham, I think both of them are two. In my opinion, they're both two of the best games this generation. So.
Okay. So, do you want to talk about, what do you want to talk about? We want to talk about Arkham City, Arkham Asylum.
Let's talk about Arkham Asylum because it has a special place in my heart.
Okay.
So Arkham Asylum was, it brings back a lot of memories, Alex. You probably know why, right?
Maybe. I don't really have any memories back then too much.
But it, on our old podcast, it was like one of the first games we talked about. And I remember I told you I wasn't very excited for it. And you're like, oh, I'm going to go buy it. And I like ended up buying it like midnight release. So
why? Was it like because I peer pressured you into it? Or
No. It was because of, you know, a lot of word of mouth about the quality of the game.
Okay.
And I was very skeptical of it because there was this unknown studio at the time called Rocksteady.
Mm-hmm.
And they made this Riot game that was kind of shitty. That was their only game. And they were making a Batman game. So, you know, that's not exactly the best combination, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not proven track record. But I was pretty optimistic about it because they what they showed and stuff and the fact that they were really... You know, they had, like, a lot of big guns, like Kevin Conroy, you know, Mark Hamill, Paul Dini, actually being on board with this is, like, pretty freaking fantastic.
So did Rise of Sun Tzu.
Yeah.
Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill voiced in that game, too, and we saw how that turned out. So, that didn't help my skepticism.
Yeah, but it's a different developer, and it seemed like they, you know, from the onset, they wanted to kind of take the aesthetic and of the Nolan kind of the Nolan movies and stuff, and kind of take it back into Gotham. And with the current technology, you know, like it wasn't too difficult of a stretch to imagine a Gotham that looked almost as gritty as the movies.
Yeah, and the soundtrack sounds like the Nolan film soundtrack.
Yeah.
It sounds more like that than the Danny Elfman one, which is a good thing in my opinion.
Well, Hans Zimmer is a great composer. But anyways.
I remember really enjoying that game. I think I blew through it like in 2 days.
Yeah, I actually finished that game pretty quickly. And then what happened was immediately after that is I restarted the game. And I really just totally like wanted to play that game all over again because I really enjoyed the whole progression of your character and all that stuff. And just the imaginativeness that, you know, kind of went into designing, you know, the mythology and, you know, and all the places in Arkham Asylum, you know.
The wisest decision of that game, too, was it had the detective feel, like it would slow down, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that was great. It like you get into the detective parts where you would have to track down like cigarette smoke and shit and get to be a detective. And you know what? Those parts were fun too. They had a very adventure game like feel to them. Not
right.
I'm not saying they're exactly like it, but you know they had a mild feel to it. That
right.
Yeah, those games. So
it was the very first time that you know, the Dark Knight was actually, you know, given the detective mantle and stuff in any of the games. So this was really interesting from a gameplay standpoint. But let's move on to Arkham City, which I am kind of mixed about.
I know. And you're kind of in the minority there. So
apparently.
Yeah. I think Arkham City is a far better game, personally.
Yeah, my take on this is that, you know, I never considered the first Arkham game as an open world game. Like, you still had very fixed kind of objectives and stuff, and it's more like a Metroid-style game than it is an open world game.
I will agree with you on that.
Yeah, and as far as I'm concerned, it's very rare for me to actually finish an open world game from beginning to end. Like, Grand Theft Auto 4, as great as a game as it is, did not finish it. Same thing with Red Dead Redemption, great game, didn't finish it either.
I'm shocked.
Assassin's Creed 2, on the other hand, yes, I did. And actually, I finished every single one, like, right after that. I can't tell you exactly why I am okay with those specific games. But as far as, like, you know, Arkham City was concerned, it wasn't necessarily the... I guess it wasn't necessarily the fact that the whole area was kind of just this giant letter C that bugged the hell out of me. But it's just that the way that I would have played something like that. And this is kind of the problem with open world games because of their freedom, is that I don't get to really, you know, like it allows you to kind of play the game however you want. And the way that I want to play it is I want to get to the next section where I get to beat the shit out of people and kind of experience the closed areas that made Arkham Asylum like really fun for me. And that was that, and because of that, I missed all the different sections, all the side quests, and I'm not really into that kind of stuff. And it seems like they were kind of injecting a lot of that stuff, you know, for other people, and they, you know, they kind of forgot like what made, you know, the original Arkham game kind of magical in my opinion, which is there's, you know, like when you emerge from that one section in Arkham Asylum where you see like the, you know, you see the whole asylum and you see like, you know, this kind of greenhouse on the left and then another huge building on the right, you're kind of like thinking, oh shit, that's a huge area to explore. But in this, the case of Arkham City, it was kind of weird because the big area to explore is basically outside and then the interior stuff is actually pretty small. And that's what one thing that I was kind of disappointed about.
Right. I don't agree with you on this, and you know this.
Right.
I'm a side quest person. Mm-hmm. I like that type of stuff. I think it fit well. You know, sometimes I just like jumping down in the streets and seeing a bunch of thugs just talking shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, fuck you, I'm Batman, and just fuck them up, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I like that feel. Like, you know, and you know, some of the side quests, you know, well, all of them, all of them made sense to me. Like, sometimes, you know, you see the reporter get beaten up by thugs. Mm-hmm. Batman, you'd stop and fucking save his ass.
It's not a matter of these things making sense. It's a matter of, like, the interior is feeling a lot smaller, a lot significantly smaller, by the way, than most of the interiors in Arkham Asylum. They're pretty freaking tiny, and there are some sections where you come in there, and that would be, like, an example would be, like, the first building you ever go into after you get your suit and stuff, where it's just basically, like, a couple of hallways and then a big room, and then you gotta leave. You know, it's kind of like, and then the area after that, it was like this big kind of stealth area, and then you go up this area, and then you're, you know, and then you jump out. And I'm like, okay, that's kind of, yeah. Again, it's a difference of design, because, you know, Arkham Asylum is one huge facility with very different areas. And it's almost to me like, it feels more old school than something that they were trying to do in Arkham City. And I think that the biggest sacrifice that they did in Arkham City was, well, let's get a big expansive space. The interior space, we'll mask that by basically forcing you to go back and forth, right, through each of the areas, which I'm not a fan of that either.
I can understand your point of view, and I can see that, but I don't agree. Okay, right. But unlike, you know, when I usually rebuttal you and I try to make you see my point of view, I mm-hmm. actually see your point of view, but I still don't agree. My point of view is I felt that the interior areas in Arkham Asylum were a little redundant at times. Not totally, but a little mm-hmm. redundant. I think the smaller areas in Arkham City have better pacing.
I don't know about that. Because the problem with pacing, like, we can talk about this all night, yeah, but I felt that But to me, the pacing of the game is kind of broken, because all I did was, you know, in order for me to like get from point A to point B, it just flew through the entire fucking city. And I was like, fuck you guys. I'm not going to answer the phone. I'm not going to beat you guys up. I just want to get the story going, period.
I think it's a difference of game style, my friend, in this case. Play style, I should say.
I guess so. I just want to get the story out of the way. And, you know, the fact that I'm forced to go through a freaking area, like, for a length period of time, it's kind of not that fun for me.
You like story, I like story and side quests. But, you know, like with anything else, play style is a matter of
preference. I like concentrated games. Right. And I mean, where the actual single player has a lot of the girth of, you know, the game and stuff, but there's so many, come on, 400 Riddler trophies, really?
I will agree on Riddler trophies. I do not like collecting Riddler trophies.
I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg, my friend. There's like I think I want to say maybe four or five, maybe more, like side quests that I didn't even touch. But there's a ton of them.
I like more of the story-based one. You know what? The Riddler side quest was something I will agree with you. I don't like the Riddler trophies very much. Mm-hmm. I'll agree with you on that, okay?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, so there you go.
Batman. In any case, so pretty much like that's, you know, that's all the Batman video games. We can talk all in all about, you know, Arkham City and stuff, but this is not all about just the video games for now. Of course, we'll return back to our regularly scheduled video games. But the next thing we're going to be talking about is something that's, you know, it's about 8 years in the making, pretty much, you know, and that's going to be the Nolan movies and stuff, like the Christopher Nolan movies, Batman Begins, The Dark Knight, and The Dark Knight Rises. But before we start, we do want to warn you guys that we're going to be spoiling the fuck out of all three of these movies. So if you don't want to tune in, skip ahead by about 20 minutes, and you're going to basically wind up in the party chat segment of our episode. So, but for the rest of you guys, of course, just stick around, and we're going to be talking about all things Batman in Christopher Nolan's universe. And of course, if you're still listening, like I said, we're going to be spoiling all three Batman movies. I almost said Spider-Man. I'm like, why the fuck was I thinking Spider-Man? We're all talking about Batman.
It would be four Spider-Man movies.
Oh, jeez. Well, you know, it depends on continuity and yada, yada, yada. Anyways, Batman. So, obviously, we both liked the Nolan trilogy.
Yay.
I think that's, you know, that is no question. So let's start with just an overview of the series and stuff. So what did you think of how everything started and tied up and all that stuff?
Let me go on the record and say I, of all three Nolan pictures, I'm unlike most people. I like them all equally.
Really?
Yeah. Like to me, it's like for different reasons, you know? Okay. And like Batman Begins, I like it because it's, you know, it's the story of the beginning of Batman, obviously, you know.
Well, yeah, again. Yeah,
Begins, obviously, you know, Batman Begins.
Right.
You know, and its thematic was, you know, about Bruce Wayne becoming Batman and how he settled into that role.
Right.
The Dark Knight was the middle story where it was about him and the decisions he had to make and whether, you know, if he should go to the extremes at times, such
it
as
was the Empire Strikes yeah. Back of the series.
Yeah. Yeah. And The Dark Knight Rises, which, you know, I won't compare to Return of the Jedi because it didn't have Ewoks, fortunately. was you know,
yes, but it had Bane.
I like the Bane voice. I will say, I liked it because it was sort of a, you know, a fall and rise type story, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, basically. So I really like that.
Okay. Now, this is going to sound really weird, but you know, to me, like, this is this generation's main trilogy. Like, we've had trilogies over the past few generations. We've had
yep.
Indiana Jones, we've had Star Wars, we've had Lord of the Rings, to some degree Harry Potter, and now this, you know? It's pretty incredible to see that, you know, to see something as mature and as, and, you know, Kevin Smith called it earnest representation of Batman in the real world, you know? Like, at first, before I saw Batman and stuff, I was kind of like, I don't know how I feel about this. But, you know, at the time, like, I was like, okay, you know, like, Christopher Nolan, I kind of know his work from Memento. It should be pretty fucking cool, you know? And mind you, like, we talked yesterday, and I did watch Insomnia. I'm not a big fan of it still, okay. even watching it. But I am a fan of all his other movies.
So Insomnia, you're not a big fan of?
No.
I like all his films. I'll just go on the record.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not as smart as his other movies. I think it's because it's an adaptation.
It's a remake, isn't it? Of like a yeah. Swedish film?
Uh-huh. It is. And I think that's why it didn't sit well with me. It's because it seemed like he kind of got shackled in that one. And he couldn't like kind of like express himself properly in that. So anyway, so, you know, obviously we both saw Batman Begins and that was freaking great. It was a fresh take on Batman in kind of a realistic setting. And mind you, the bad guy is not Scarecrow. The bad guy was Ra's al Ghul, which, by the way, is a, you know, is not exactly an A-list villain in Batman's, you know, like, rogues gallery, wouldn't you say?
I would disagree with that. I think Ra's al Ghul is very popular, and I think he's actually one of Batman's most dangerous foes. He he's up there. I think Batman has like 7 or 8 A-list characters, A-list villains.
I don't know, because I mean, you know, when you think Batman, you don't think of Ra's al Ghul. You think of Joker. You think of Riddler. You think of, you know, a whole bunch of other people before you actually got to Ra's al Ghul.
I think the correct term for me personally is he's lesser known, maybe, but I wouldn't say he's a lesser villain by any means.
Well, no, I wasn't implying that. When I say A-list, I mean the most, you know, some of the more popular. That's what that means.
To me, grade means quality. So, you know,
not
to you,
not everywhere else.
Not to you, but to me,
it's like A-list celebrity, Z-list celebrity. We would be Z-list celebrities, my friend, because we're lesser known. We would be
known celebrities.
Probably, yeah. I mean, in any case, you know what I mean? It's kind of like what I'm saying is that, you know, he could have picked anybody else, you know, but he picked Ra's al Ghul. Again, of all people. Of all people he could have picked, he could have picked the Riddler. He could have started with a Joker, and that would have been okay. But he picked Ra's al Ghul. And that whole story arc was very interesting, because it never occurred to me that Liam Neeson was actually, in fact, Ra's al Ghul. And the way that they played it was really interesting, because they didn't use the Lazarus Pits or anything like that. But they just kind of shrouded it in a veil of, you know, fake mythology, or false mythology and stuff, in order to kind of perpetuate Ra's al Ghul's history, you know. And I actually like that,
right?
You know, and then you go on to move on to The Dark Knight, which he did tackle the Joker, but he did it in such a way that it wasn't the same at all as, you know, the portrayal that he's had in other media. For, you know, he was basically a psychopath, you know, right. he with no history. He made his own clothes, at least that's what it sounded like. He has no fingerprints. He's basically a John Doe, you know. And it's kind of interesting too, because a lot of people say that both Batman Begins and actually all three movies had kind of inklings of Batman stories. Like, you know, like there's some parts of the Killing Joke that is actually kind of in this a little bit. How he, you know, he's kind of just making up his origin story the whole time, you know. But what's the most interesting part about this is the juxtaposition of the Dark Knight title with the White Knight, which is, of course, Harvey Dent, which we all know was going to turn into Two-Face at some point. But what we didn't know is how. And the Joker, being manipulative and smart, you know, as he is, was able to do this, like, with kind of ease, I should say.
You know what? I'm gonna make a confession here real quick about Heath Ledger real quick.
Okay.
When he was announced, what was it, 2007 for the Joker? I wasn't happy. I was, you know, the reason for that was, aside from Brokeback Mountain, you know,
and A Knight's Tale.
yeah. Aside from Brokeback Mountain, most his films were teeny bopper bullshit. You know, Ten Things I Hate About You, Knight's Tale, some exorcism movie from the director of A Knight's Tale. Yeah. You know, that everyone forgot about. You know, except for me apparently. But the point was Heath Ledger just did not seem like the Joker to me. He's like him. Why him? You know.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then I remember later on that year they released the first photo of him as the Joker.
Uh-huh.
And those, you know, that, remember that picture of just his face?
Uh-huh.
And I was like, whoa, you know, that doesn't look like Heath Ledger. There might be some hope. And then, you know, of course, sadly, he passed away. And
well, here's the thing, right? This Joker doesn't even look like the traditional Joker that we know. Because, you know, he fucking used, like, his knife to carve his smile in. And that's, like, really psychotic shit. Because in the comic books, it's just some chemical, right? That basically forced him to have, like, this really weird smile. But here, it's like it is self-imposed because of his craziness.
And you nailed why the Nolan films are brilliant. You know why?
Mm-hmm.
They take the elements. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the, you know, the science fiction-y or comic book-y elements.
Mm-hmm.
But he still managed to keep those kind of comic booky things, but still kept them in a realistic manner. You mm-hmm. know, prime example of that will be when we talk about Bane in The Dark Knight Rises, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But he managed to do the smile thing with Joker in mm-hmm. that sense. and keep
and
it
at
grounded.
The same time, kind of, you know, kind of echo like what, you know, the psychosis of that character. Like, right. Yeah, he is so insane that he basically carved a smile on his face. And it's not like a freaking permanent paint on his face, too. Like, you know, like what the cops were saying, you know, or rather what the crooks were saying. It's like war paint. It's not a disfigurement or a skin cancer or whatever. He wears it like war paint, like he's going to war. And that was the rationale of why the Joker looked like the way that he is.
There were some scenes that were borderline disturbing too in that film, like the snuff film type sequence.
Or the one, you know, that Heath Ledger actually directed those scenes.
The snuff film like scene where I did not know that.
Yeah, basically, like Heath Ledger actually filmed all those scenes himself. Those scenes where he's beating the crap out of like the people and stuff. Yeah, that was him.
To give it like a kind of a, you know, like that ugly feel to it, I suppose. Like
it's pretty much.
Yeah. And then the other scene that gets to me too, and it's nothing really him being evil or whatever he is. Mm-hmm. It's the scene where he's in the car and he sticks his head out in the wind, reveling in the chaos.
Like a dog, yeah.
Yeah.
That was disturbing for you?
No, yeah, it's just him reveling in the chaos. You know, it's kind of how can you put it? It's kind of like, you know, you just caused a lot of death and you're kind of reveling in it.
Right.
So that got to me.
I just want my phone call. That was a great line.
I like the magic trick sequence.
Yeah.
The pencil trick.
I'm going to make this pencil disappear. He just slams like this fucking guy's head. It's like, great. And voila.
That scene is great.
And like Gamble's like, you think you're going to just walk out of here and, you know, take all our money? And she's like, yeah.
I like the scene too, card. Where he makes the two guys, he's all, I have a position open.
Yeah.
Tryouts are here. And he breaks that.
We have one position open and we have tryouts. The problem is only one of you guys will get in. So make it quick. And then he walks away. I was like, yes. But anyways, Dark Knight Rises. Let's talk about it right now.
Okay. Yeah. This is, if you know, this is the spoiler scene. This is where
it's
spoilers
been
get real.
Okay. If you're still listening to this fucking thing, we warned you about like, what is it? Like more than 10 minutes ago that we were spoiling the whole series. If you basically complain up till now and stuff, like, dude, really, you weren't listening.
Don't blame us. If you're gonna come on Twitter and say, oh, it's all your fucking fault that you spoiled it, shut up. It's your fault, actually. So
yeah, and if you haven't watched a movie, shame on you. Jesus.
Yeah, you're deprived. Okay.
Anyways.
Continue.
So I don't know how to start this movie because it starts off like really, really well. Like that whole like I just want to watch the movie again just so that I can memorize like Bane's lines and stuff like that. It's it's pretty brilliant. You know, like remember in the beginning and stuff, he says like, tell me about Bane. Why does he wear the mask? A lot of loyalty for a hired gun. And then Bane, you know, still has his hood on. He says, or perhaps he's wondering why someone would shoot a man before throwing him out of a plane. You know, he does that. And the first time you hear it, you're like, this guy's supposed to be a fucking brute, you know, but he's like, he has basically almost similar smart alecky lines. And I have to say, Bane has the best fucking lines in the whole movie. Hands down. Like, I never thought that the Joker could be one-upped. But, I mean, the Joker is a great villain. He still is a great villain. But Bane just pretty much, like, I don't know. He had the smarts that you can tell that from his dialogue. You were convinced that this is a force to be reckoned with, and Batman is going to have his hands full from the very onset, you know?
The thing about Bane, and I can't compare him to the Joker, because Joker revels in he's nihilistic.
Yeah.
Bane is not nihilistic. Bane is calculating, but he also has brute strength, which I think makes him unique. Uh-huh. You know, he's not just a brute that just breaks things.
Right.
He thinks about it, then he breaks it properly, I suppose. You know, he's strategic about it and and stuff. And he, you know what he does is he breaks people both physically and mentally.
Right.
And that's what I love about the villain. And he does it in the comics as well, which is great. And I think Bane was a good choice for Nolan to go with.
Yeah. It was really, like, I wasn't sure how he was going to portray him and stuff. Because, of course, we've seen Bane already in Batman and Robin, which is terrible. He was kind of like... The only thing he said in that movie is Bane, Bane.
He was like a mutant or some shit.
He was like a mutant. Yeah, he was kind of like a lackey. And then when they would inject venom in him and stuff, that's when he'd be like all roided out. And
okay,
shit.
That's it. New rule for Gamer Horizon: Batman and Robin will never be spoken about again.
But it's funny you said that, because one of the lines that he has in the movie basically says, I was wondering what would break first, your spirit or your body. Like when basically he pissed him off and stuff and he tries to beat the shit out of Bane. You know that one battle sequence where they're both fighting against each other and there's no soundtrack? Holy crap.
That was brilliant. I'm glad that they didn't go with a soundtrack.
Yeah. I mean, that was just like pure, unadulterated, like, brutality between the both of them. But it's funny, like, remember the line where Bane basically says, your darkness is your ally. You merely adopted the dark. I was born in it, molded by it. I didn't see the light until I was already a man. Then it was nothing to me but reality. And then he would just, like, keep taunting him and shit the whole time. Bind you, he was doing a fucking villain monologue while they were beating the shit out of each other. And Bane is just completely like, whatever, dude, you can try it. You can try something, but I'm still going to beat the shit out of you and still tell you, like, how useless of a human being you are.
Wow. Yeah, he fucking... And what he did to him afterward, putting him in that prison?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was fucking brilliant. Don't you agree?
Yeah.
You know, although I cringed at the scene where they said Bruce Wayne's fucking vertebrae was sticking out.
Yeah.
And they popped it back into place.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm.
But putting him in the prison was, like, the most brilliant thing. And it wasn't like... I like the fact that Bane doesn't just kill you. He likes to see you, completely implode, I suppose. Mm-hmm.
But what was interesting, though, is that Bane is very different than most of the bad guys that Bruce Wayne has faced, because they have a lot of emotion, but Bane has a civility to him, kind of similar to the civility of the Joker when he commits his crimes. There's no panic with the Joker. He just basically does whatever he wants. And that's echoed with Bane. And I've always thought, like, ever since watching that movie, trying to figure out why the Joker was the bad guy in the second movie if they weren't going to echo him somehow in the third. And then it finally caught up to me and I said, wait a second. When the Joker does something, he's basically very calm. And Bane exuded that same kind of attitude, where he's completely calm, everything is going to go as planned. He had no fear whatsoever, because he knew that, maybe it's the painkillers, but he just, like a good example is when they're in the prison, and Bane was there, and then Bruce Wayne is like, why didn't you just kill me? And then Bane basically says, you do not fear death. You welcome it. Your punishment must be more severe. that kind of thing. Like, very kind of... Am I getting his voice right, by the way?
You're doing a pretty good job on it. You just need some sort of distortion to it.
Like a freaking breathing mask.
I will say this about...
Anyways, just to close out, that one scene, it was very civil. Like, two friends talking to each other. He Bane's tone is very quiet. It's very like, you do not fear death. You welcome it. You kind of it's like he was giving him advice or something. Shit. It's weird.
I will say this about Bane. His portrayal. Now, we talked about the movie that shall not be named.
Okay, yeah.
In other Bane in the comics, while he has a bit of a different backstory, he's pretty much the same.
Yeah.
And Bane in was also portrayed correctly in the animated series.
Yeah.
Where I remember in the animated series, he had like a servant and he would wear a jacket and he would be all proper and shit. And then when he would fight Batman, he'd be in his,
Right.
In his little, sleeveless shirt or whatever. Sure. And it was cool. It was pretty much the same Bane that we saw in the film. And he had a similar accent, I suppose. Not exactly British with a, distortion.
It's pretty British.
No. I'm talking about the one in the cartoon. It was more like Spaniard or something.
Well, yeah, because he's like a freaking, like one of those like mass wrestler dudes.
So that's Bane. Other things about the film, though. Catwoman.
Catwoman's pretty good. I don't have anything else much to say about her, but the way that Mortal Owen portrayed her is pretty much almost exactly like how she is in the comic book.
I have a question for you about that. Did you notice her little sidekick from year one was in the movie?
Yes. I did notice that. I was like, holy crap, are you serious?
I was like, that's pretty cool. I don't know her name, but her side, you know, the her little blonde-haired friend from year one.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I thought that was a cool homage to the comics that they added that character in there. So.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. And of course, we all know that the bad guy is Talia al Ghul, which, again, it's like, what? You got some balls to fucking, put the al Ghul. Like, basically, the bottom line is this, and I'm just quoting Kevin Smith on this. Basically, the whole story is basically about, like, the Al Ghuls have it in bad with Batman. Really hate the Wayne family.
Oh, shit.
And this is what I was telling you. It has some parallels with the Court of the Court of Owls.
Yeah, it does.
You know, because, they were trying to basically get Gotham down and stuff like that. And it's the same thing. And I don't know. Like, I don't want to say anymore because we're out of spoiler territory. But I think the implementation of that character was pretty smartly done, but it was very jarring because, just because of what happened and stuff. Anyways.
I'm going to ask you one last question.
Okay.
If you were to score it, well, let's score it. What would you give the film?
The only way that all of them are good.
If you can.
All of them are good in my opinion, but if I had to rank them all, I would have to rank Dark Knight first, Dark Knight Rises, and then Batman Begins.
Okay. Well, okay, that's fair enough. I can't rank them like that because I like them all equally.
Right.
So, there you go.
But it's not in terms of like whether one is a good movie or bad movie. All of them are equally good. But as far as personal preference goes, that's how I would basically rank them and stuff.
I see. I can't rank them. I cannot wait for the Blu-ray to come out, watch them like boom.
What?
Watch them like boom, just all in order.
I was gonna say, like, what's boom? Like, what's going on?
Boom, all Batman. Oh, boom, done. Sad face. Wait for that Superman movie and whatever is next.
Well, of course you buy the Blu-ray. You like my voice so much. All right, so let's get on with our next segment, shall we? So the next segment, of course, is our party chat. And yeah, we didn't get a lot of emails in the previous episode, but I think everybody was just kind of trying to get used to our like bi-weekly schedule, which, we'll talk about that in the next episode, like why we're doing it and stuff and what else is kind of planned in the future and whatnot. So anyways, the very first email is from Dumez, a.k.a. Martin, or, whatever. So he has a comment about our Ouya comment, I guess. And he says, who is this for? I think the $99 price is important. People can buy this willy-nilly as an extra toy and not as a PS3 or Wii U replacement. It's cheap enough that it can be an addition. Also, I think it would be very interesting if you could play the same Android phone games on this thing. If you really get into a game on the phone, it would be a great option to be able to sometimes play it at home on a full screen. My curiosity is piqued, and I will be paying close attention to this. The thing is, the iPhone, the iPad, and the iPod Touch do this already with the Apple TV at $99. And mind you, that's out right now. Okay?
Right.
And I don't know if you can justify buying another $99 device, but that's the thing. I'm probably not the target audience for this. And I don't agree that the Ouya should be a secondary device, because if it's just a secondary device, then that means that that's a purchase that you can do, like whenever you want to, like, maybe here and there as kind of like a stocking stuffer. And really, like, I think the Ouya, what is trying to do is be like a big console, like not like a complementary console is like what Martin was saying. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. I agree with you 100%, Alex, okay? Mm-hmm. In this, I do. My only thing, too, is for this Ouya, if it's going to have any credibility for gamers, too, that, it shouldn't just play ports of iPhone games.
Mm-hmm.
It should have games designed for it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my concern, because when from all the talk about Ouya, I hope I'm saying that right.
Ouya.
I thought we was a fucking weird name. Ouya. Now we have Ouya. My thing is this, to be quite frank. I want to see if this game is going to be designed for indie developers. You know, make some original stuff for it. Make it make it interesting for me to pick it up, because I don't want to just pick it up to play ports of iPhones or Android games. So that's my say on that. Is that going to happen? I don't know. But I'm just saying, you know, I don't want to play just ports of those games.
Right. Because, I mean, there's other ways to do them. And there's a reason why they work, too. You know, I think I will still contend that for mobile gaming, RPGs should, you know, like, I think JRPGs will exist in that platform as well. But as far as the Ouya is concerned, Ryan Bowling is saying that his, you know, he used to be the community manager for Infinity Ward and stuff, but he's making his own company and he's making an episodic game for the Ouya. So that's one, but we need more. You know, we need more support for this platform. And I'm just hoping that, you know, they have a solid plan, because nobody wants to be gypped when, including themselves, they don't. No one wants to be gypped when it comes to the console and stuff.
Right, and you know what? It's kind of like I love Saturday Morning RPG, right?
Right.
But I'm not gonna buy Ouya to play it on my TV. I have it on my phone right now. I could play it after this podcast again.
And actually, I can play it on my TV if I hook it up to my Apple TV. That's no problem with me.
I can do that right now. Oh, mm-hmm. You could do it this very instant.
Yes.
So why need a Ouya port of it? I'm not discrediting the game by any means.
Yeah, the Apple TV is $99, 1080p, displaying all your iPhone games, iPad games, iPod Touch games on the big screen over the over your local network. So why do I need another $99 device?
Right.
You know, for me, like, that solves the question of whether or not I want the Ouya, and the answer for me is no. Because there's no exclusives for it other than that one game. As with most consoles, you need exclusives for your platform. And we're not talking about Android exclusives or iOS exclusives. No, we're talking about games specifically made for the Ouya.
Ouya exclusives. That's exactly what we want. We don't want, you know, like I said, I don't want Saturday Morning RPG on there. Maybe, you know, I like that company. Why don't they make their own, another, maybe a sequel or even their own, another game?
Yeah, put the sequel on there exclusively.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? Or something like that, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So,
realistically, like, doing exclusives for an unproven console is a risk, and I understand that. But that's kind of like what the Ouya needs in order to kind of solidify their place in the industry. Not the support of thousands of people and stuff. Because let's be honest here, like, I don't know what the installed base was, but the last time I checked, it was like 40,000. I mean, that's 40,000 people that you can sell your game to, but how many of that 40,000 is actually going to buy your game?
Exactly. And to also add, too, back to the game real briefly, not going to repeat anything we said, but it's a lot of the iPhone games, too, that they want to port, from my understand. I don't want to just turn on my console to briefly play, and I'm pretty sure this isn't going to be, but this is an example, Ninja Fruit for like 30 seconds. Fruit Ninja. Yeah, I always mix up the name. I don't want to turn on my console just to play Fruit Ninja. I could do that on my phone. There's a reason why it's on my phone or my iPod or whatever.
Yeah.
Because it's a quick play.
Right.
So, there you go.
But by no means we're not pessimistic about it. We actually want the thing to succeed. We want to be proven wrong, which is why, like, we're bringing up these, you know, these concerns and stuff. And we do hope that it does have, like, a very fantastic launch and we eat our words. Because if that does happen, oh shit, then we're going to be in for an interesting next generation.
And let's also add, too, I don't think there's a whole lot of information about it at the moment, too.
Well, even with the interviews, there's still not a lot of information.
So that's all I got to say on the Ouya.
Okay, so next is by Lewis, and he had some multiple questions. So let's just kind of hammer this down quick, right?
Okay.
Okay, what are your thoughts on Capcom revising old classic fighting games? Should they do it or just do new IPs? I am okay with them redoing it, provided that they're also working on other stuff, which is exactly what they're doing.
I agree. I personally would love to see another Darkstalkers, you know.
Ono's been hinting at that.
I've been hearing about that. You know, even that game, Fallen Sun, remember Fallen Sun?
Yeah.
yeah, let's see another one of that. Those, I'm just, you know, who remembers that game other than me?
I know. Okay. So, next question. Do you think that JoJo's Bizarre Adventure HD, the HD version at $20 is a bit steep for an old game?
No, let me explain. We talked about the HDs a couple weeks ago, uh-huh. And while Alex and I, well, you and I should say, had, you know, different opinions, I think JoJo Bizarre Adventure is a different, is an exception, because that game, it's hard to get.
Sure.
And I can validate that. And a fighting game for $20, you know, I've heard it's from a lot of fighting game aficionados. It's a very good fighting game. It's a deep one. A deep fighting game for $20 that you can spend hours on is worth it. So,
just to put this into context, and just for information for our listeners and stuff, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure for the Dreamcast on Amazon costs about $65, and JoJo's Bizarre Adventure for the PS1, the lowest price is $39.99. So $20 is not too steep, especially if it's a 1080p.
I love when you do that, and it's, you know.
There you so go.
There you go.
So next, should old fighting games on PSN Live cost $14.99 or $9.99? $9.99, you're not making any money out of it. Remember that they're also paying for Sony and Microsoft to get these listed. I think $9.99 is too low. $15, it depends. It depends on how long it's been in there. $20 is not that bad of a price. Let's be honest here.
I think when, for example, when Super Street Fighter 2 HD Remix came out back in 2008, back then it was worth $15. I don't know so much now, though, you know?
Right.
They did offer it free for PSN, though, a couple months back. Something like Street Fighter 3, I think, you know, that's a perfect price for that game.
I mean, it's not just that they're porting the freaking game. It's very difficult to do, especially since you're doing HD remixes and stuff, because you got to redo the sprites. Like, you can't just blow up pixels. It's not that easy. I think people right. are, I think a lot of gamers tend to overgeneralize crap like this, and until they actually get to do it, they won't understand how it is and stuff. You're basically saying that you want to blow up a 640 by 480 pixel all the way up to, you know, 1920 by 1080, and, you know, if you take a look at Marvel vs. Capcom 2 and how they've done that shit, I mean, holy crap, were the pixels crappy. It's not exactly that simple.
And let's be fair here, too. Because it's an old game doesn't mean it's going to work on your hardware.
Yeah.
Exactly. That, I mean, some games are just not compatible with certain parts of hardware. You're the hardware guy. I don't know if you'd agree with that. But
yeah,
that's
you have to build an emulator for the old code to work.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, so it's a pretty complicated thing.
In addition to the new changes.
Yeah, exactly. So there you go.
Yeah, so anyways, last question by Lewis. Should Capcom do Capcom Classic Collection Volume 3? I don't know what else they freaking put in that thing.
You know what? There's a lot of their late 90s stuff.
The thing, like, they kind of did a lot of collections already on various platforms. So I think Capcom at this point, they would, you know, it kind of goes back to Lewis's question. Would you rather have them do original games, or would you rather have them do new stuff? And at this point, I'd much rather, and because it takes a lot of manpower to be able to get a new game out, I would much rather have them do a new game rather than have them go back into their library and release, like, old games.
I agree with that. I'm just saying, if they were to do a third collection, which I don't think they will, because...
I don't think so either.
Because collections, let's be honest, that's kind of last gen. They rather release a game individually, digitally,
mm-hmm.
as opposed in a collection. You don't see collections much anymore.
Right.
But if you did, they do have a lot of their late 90s, early, you know, 2000s kind of arcade games they could do that with. But I agree with you that I would rather see new games from them. So that's that.
Okay. So the next one is pretty long. And let me see if I can kind of distill this and stuff. He basically, this is by Brandon. How exactly do you guys feel about Capcom right now? I feel that Capcom fans are stuck between a rock and a hard place when it comes to support. The developers are putting out stellar games like Dragon's Dogma and soon after Resident Evil 6, yet for every game they put out, there's always a giant management fuck-up. So, like, you know, basically does an example and stuff. So do we stop buying the games and endanger the actually competent developers? Or do we risk another controversial management move by still buying games, which could give management the impression that fans eat up everything like sheep? That's a good question, actually. For me, I still buy them because I think that they have a very competent reason for it. And I think that a lot of the doubt that's being cast by a lot of the gamers is unwarranted because, again, it's a lot of speculation mixed with fact. And that's not really good to try to do, like, or to try to kind of absorb.
Right.
Capcom is a business like everything else and stuff. If you're going to complain about privacy, there's so many other things to complain about other than privacy, because the only reason why a lot of them want that information is to make your gaming, other than marketing stuff to you, which is part of it, is also making sure that the gaming experience is actually solid. You know, like, telemetrics is something that a lot of companies have been doing and monitoring your gaming habits and all that stuff. And I'm sorry if people feel that their privacy is being invaded just because, like, Capcom is looking at ones and zeros that don't even have their, that they don't even have their address or credit card information. But if you're going to complain about that, then get the fuck off the internet. Seriously.
I agree with you 100%. Can I add something, though, real quick?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just going to add, the only thing I think Capcom a little bit falters at is I don't think they handle DLC right half the time.
Right.
But I'm not going to go into this whole tangent about DLC because I'm not as critical of it. I think, if they do, like, with the gems on, Street Fighter X Tekken, for example, the gems, you don't have to buy those.
Mm-hmm.
They're not necessary. They're not necessity or extra costumes or whatever.
Right.
They don't handle it right, but they don't have to buy them because, to be honest, I still buy Capcom stuff. I just don't buy half the DLC.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And you know what? I think Capcom, I'm going to get a lot of hell. Mm-hmm. And if you don't like it, you could kiss my ass. But I think Capcom is an excellent company still.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not disappointed in them by any means.
I think they're the most... Like, in terms of, like, business maturity, out of everybody in Japan, they're the ones who basically survived this generation.
Yeah.
Pretty much unscathed.
And they, they've really, they've done some unique things, like Asura's Wrath and stuff, too. So, there you go.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about, like, people who, like, there's, like, a thirst for new IPs and stuff. The problem with new IPs is if people don't buy them. Gamers, there's some gamers who will only buy new IPs, but if you're not buying new IPs, then, then so what?
Right.
It's still a business, bottom line. And I think that's the most important thing about it.
And Capcom has proven they can revitalize old franchises. Look at what Street Fighter 4 did several years back.
Right.
It revitalized the genre, for God's sake. So that's
right. Right. Okay, but Brandon has more stuff, but it's not really a question. It's more of a comment about JRPGs. We can probably talk about that in another episode, don't you think?
Let's talk about it a little bit next show.
Okay, and it's more of a comment than it is a question. There is no question. The question was the one that we just, I just asked you about Capcom. Okay. So,
yeah.
But anyways, that about does it for this batastic episode of the Game Horizon podcast. Yes, I did it again.
60s Batman.
Batman! Anyway, bam. So do you want to say anything, dude? I don't know. I don't know what else to say. I'm kind of Batmaned out, I think.
Go visit my YouTube channel at youtube.com/megasix1.
Awesome. And if you want to subscribe to my Twitter account, you can go to twitter.com/eternityinblack.
Oh, my motherfucking Twitter. I'm not going to do a voice. Motherfucking Twitter at, twitter.com/megasx1.
Yes.
By the way, if you want to find me on anything else, it's pretty much megasx1.
Sure.
So there you go.
Yes. And of course, you can, as I said, you can follow me on twitter.com/eternityinblack. please follow us on twitter.com/gamerhorizon. We are actually conducting surveys and whatnot that we're going to be using in a future episode, so stay tuned for that. twitter.com/gamerhorizon, gamerhorizon.com, so you can subscribe to all our feeds and whatnot. You know, you can listen to our episodes there as well. And of course, we also still have our survey up there, so you guys should really post something on that. And as usual, if you want to, you know, email us any questions, concerns before the next episode of the Game Horizon podcast, we don't have any plans yet. So, you know, email us, partychat@gamerhorizon.com. Email us whatever you want, you know, comments, questions, suggestions. And, you know, we will make time, and we'll probably even devote some special time to address your comments and stuff, just like with Brandon and stuff, which is, Jesus, it's like 4 pages long or something like that. Four paragraphs. Not 4 pages, but 4 paragraphs, sorry. But, yeah, so until next time, we'll see you guys later.